The following talk was given by Jed Larson at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on August 31st, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Nice to see everybody. Nice chatty room in here. There's nice conversations going on. Hope your Labor Day weekend is going pretty nice. Long weekend for most people, at least. I ran across a quote from Suzuki Roshi, and I thought I'd just start the beginning of the talk with this quote, kind of as a nice intro for what I'll be discussing today. Suzuki Roshi, I think a lot of you know who he is, author of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. This is a collection of talks from Suzuki from the 60s and 70s. And this quote here, I'm not sure if it's from a book or not. I got it from an archive of talks of his. But he says, in Zazen, sitting meditation, we do not try to stop thinking, or we do not try to listen or hear or see anything. But if something appears in your mind, you can just leave it. And if you hear something, you should hear it, and you should just accept it. He goes on a little bit later and says, no second activity appears in your Zazen, or should not appear. The sound, that is one activity. The second is, what is that sound? A motor car or garbage truck or something else? That is the second notion, the second activity. If you hear it, that is all you hear. So I think maybe a lot of us recognize this experience that can come up in sitting meditation where you hear something like a distant rumbling sound and you're wondering what that is. And then, oh, yeah, it's a garbage truck. Or the rumble, it's kind of amazing how complex the mind is. Because maybe the sound of that rumble will happen, but if it's summer, the notion of snowplow just doesn't enter the picture at all. We're not like thinking about it at all. Or, you know, like thunder. Is that thunder or a jet that would be in the summer? So these things happen very quickly, and there's a whole contextual kind of environment that allows this to happen, basically. But we're kind of become pretty curious pretty quick about what that sound is. And along with the sound, trying to identify it, or just the normal thing where we try to figure out what it is, then very easily or quickly comparison can come up. Like, this is the garbage truck version of reality, and I know there's a non-garbage truck version of reality too. So we're sort of putting them side by side, perhaps, if there's something that's annoying us or something along those lines. But as Suzuki says here, if something appears, we can just leave that. We can just let that sound be the sound. And in this practice, what we are instructed to do is just to come back to the breath. That simplicity of the breath. We can always have that. Just come back to that. This particular teaching actually reminded me of something else I ran across recently on the teaching of dependent arising. I was reading in the book What the Buddha Taught by Rahula a little bit. And he has a quick synopsis of dependent arising. And part of it is the phrase, when this is, that is. So when this is, that is. This arising, that arises. And I think dependent arising can be a very helpful teaching in sort of guiding our attention back to actually how reality shows up. It's pretty easy to kind of be in this mode of operation where we're sort of thinking of different scenarios, different things. You know, maybe we'll prefer something else over what's happening now. So we're kind of, we've got things side by side here. But dependent arising is a teaching that brings to us this insight that the entirety of experience shows up and it's dependent on everything. So you have this whole picture, and that's actually how relative reality shows up. As opposed to maybe how we think it or how we prefer things to be. So these different activities that Suzuki talks about, the first activity or the second activity, or just hearing the sound, in just experience, it's complete. So the sound, just the sound. Or even if we start thinking about it, that thought. If we're sitting in meditation, there's this thought that's everything. This whole picture is right here. And we can actually notice this. So this activity is always fluid, always thorough. But even so, we may try to want to control things. Suzuki talks about, he's telling us here that we don't need to try to stop thinking. It's best not to try to do that. And the main reason is that it doesn't work, basically. That's why he's telling us not to do it. It may seem like all the different scenarios that we come across in everyday life where it seems like we're in control of things in different ways. But I think if we take a closer look, basically what we're doing in our everyday world, we're just kind of working with different things and interacting. We're just shifting our attention from this and that. So, you're at a movie theater and you're eating some popcorn and you think, oh, I want a sip of pop. So, it seems like we're sort of exerting control and doing something else. But in the case of what Suzuki's talking about here, he's helping us understand that you can't control thinking with thinking. So, as he's talking about here, the sound of the garbage truck, if we feel that we want to stop something, what's actually happening is just another idea is coming up, another preference. So you can't stop. A certain desire that comes up with just another desire. So Suzuki here is not kind of like just making this up. He's just telling us very practical help and to understand what meditation is, that we don't actually need to try to control anything. It doesn't work. So what we have in meditation is extremely simple, as I touched on briefly. It's just a return to the breath. And the breath is pretty unique in a lot of different ways. One of the reasons is that it's always here. It's the breath. We come back to it. It's consistent. It's that complete reliability of having this breath. And the breath is elusive in a way. It's almost makes me think of dependent arising a little bit, that we're breathing out, the world is breathing in. There's this kind of ungraspable quality to it that has this elusive nature. And maybe most importantly is that it's completely not exciting at all, which in terms of practice is quite helpful. We're always going after the thing, the shiny little object. So the breath is pretty mundane.
And it's kind of diametrically opposed to pretty much everything that our society is telling us, you know, to go after this, entertain yourself, you know, acquire more. The breath is just very simple. It's not meant to do any of those things. We just come back to it. And trying to control, and there's probably a lot of different ways that you can think about how trying to stop thinking or trying to control in our practice is not helpful. Another one that came to mind for me is that it doesn't correspond to what is happening in reality. So if you're sitting and the sound of the garbage truck or something annoying is happening, and, you know, or we just want our environment to change somehow, something's not quite ideal. There's this idea that, as I was kind of alluding to before, this non-garbage truck version of reality. And for us, I think it's, you know, it's quite sincere that there is something else, something different that we could have right now. You know, if it's, you know, something not ideal is happening right now, there's something else that I could be doing. You know, all kinds of different things. But this doesn't actually correspond to what's happening, because we don't recognize that this is just simply an idea. So if the idea of non-garbage truck version comes up, Suzuki is helping us notice, just to realize that this is an idea that's happening. It's not an actual reality, this comparison that's going on. And when we can see that directly, as experience, to see thinking coming up and to know thinking, to thoroughly know it, is, I think, very helpful. So, as I was saying before, even if it is an idea of something that we prefer, you know, if that idea comes up, we can actually realize that this is an idea. And again, it's related to this dependent arising that says this arising, that arises. So again, this is a teaching that's showing us that what's happening now is the immediacy of this experience, just thought, that's all. And whatever we do in our life, whatever we experience, this here now experience is just exactly this, and we can see that. Of course, dependent arising is part of the foundational teachings. I thought I'd mention that as well. If it kind of piques some interest, it'll be part of the course, the series of classes that we have on Tuesdays, I think, starting with the Four Noble Truths. So dependent arising has an incredible amount of wisdom in it, as do these other classes. So I thought I'd just draw your attention to that if you might be interested in signing up for those. Steve will start us out with Four Noble Truths here pretty quick, just in a couple weeks or so. Yeah.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
So when you were talking about this and that, one thing that always strikes me is how this seems very clear and defined in the first there. That can explode into a million little pieces. Like, for example, I know the garbage truck I'm talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll hear the noise, and then I might, my brain might go, oh, a garbage truck. But if I let it keep, if the vats keeps going, it'll start to branch out. Garbage truck, can I put my trash out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, it goes up. Right.
That's an exciting adventure.
Yeah, so the only thing that I've seen over the years is that when that happens, I'm a little quicker to say, well, just come back here. And then there's a new this, and there's a new that. It just keeps going and going.
Mm-hmm.
Even the thought about coming back to the breath,
yeah,
that to get comfy,
Sure.
right? Because
Yep.
you're thinking, well, I'm feeling the air coming into my nostrils, colder, yeah. Coming out, well, that's warm. Then you're like, wait, what? It's just, I don't know, that is pretty crazy.
It is.
That's my God.
And I have something written in here too, and it is good. And it is good. And Suzuki talks about that, the weeds of our practice, but that is precisely where we're practicing. And it's funny how judgment comes up so quick. That's that trail I just followed on was several miles long of
Yes.
thinking, or whatever.
The mining.
Yeah, the mind weeds, so the weeds of our practice, so whatever my distraction or things that seem like they're not ideal are sort of the compost to really nourish the practice
I got
itself.
compost.
What's that? You got a big compost
I
bin?
got a
Yeah. Yeah, you turn the compost bin over. It's a little stinky. But it is good, because I think that touches back to dependent arising. This arising, that arising. So this is a teaching of this complete picture. Even if it, whatever we might kind of think of it, it actually is just this complete reality of experience. And so, we're here to just notice what is true and what is an idea. Or, just to see the idea is to understand what's true, to see through it. So if we take a little time and quiet down, we can notice that along with these subtleties of, say, dependent arising, we'll notice experience doesn't bear out any feeling of inside and outside. So this is another way of recognizing that experience is just completely working. There's no need to say anything about it. There's nothing you can say about it. I mean, we can say something about it, but nothing can capture what it is. It's almost like being out in a downpour with the rain coming down and you're very cognizant of the rain, and then you drop your keys down, a storm drain, and then it's like the rain's not happening anymore. You can just like buckets the water. If something is reality is different, but it's raining. It's funny how we get off and into our ideas. What's next? How am I going to do this? Solving or being really feeling a magnetic pull to the solutions that we really want to happen. And in light of this, no inside, no outside, I think Buddhism can also help us with that question of, what is the self? Because
Because
this
this
is
is
a part of extremely important part of the teaching. And when we look closely at the self, we'll see that that is the impetus for all of our comparisons. So knowing this aspect of the teaching, which will be part of this year-long foundational course that I was talking about too. To really take a close look at that is to see these wafting winds of preference happening and to see that it's tracing right back to the notion of self. And the teachings are, once again, in so many different ways, pointing us back to what is true and real, just experience itself. And in dedicating ourselves to that, then it'll just become more clear that reality does not show up in terms of
persistence or like a stagnant nature at all. We have nothing distinct, nothing unchanging in experience. So this is a way to understand something different than what we normally would kind of feel as kind of the ego perspective. There's a different way of understanding and living. It's understanding that, we'll consider what's happening in our, we'll think about our practice, we'll make certain judgments and so forth. We'll think, I'm thinking a lot. We'll think that, the self is producing thoughts, and we'll sort of find culprits and, we'll try to analyze it in different ways. We'll have so many just different ideas about what's happening. But dependent arising again, this arising, that arises, is again the teaching that shows that whatever is showing up as this relative reality, and it could be thought, that's the entire picture right there. It's not something we can pin down at all. That's what experience always is, exactly what it is. So as Suzuki was saying there, trying to stop thinking with our willpower is not helpful at all. It's not reflective of what's actually happening. There's no need to do that. And what we have here is a sound. If this Suzuki's talking about a sound, it's just a sound that is just sound. Suzuki's getting us back to this sound. That's it. We may go to the second thing, but we may, which is like wondering if it's what it is. Or the third thing is maybe comparing it. It's like the trail Andrew was talking about. But in the sense that the sound is the sound, what we have here is direct experience is already exactly direct experience. So what you have is wisdom, realizing wisdom, just as, this appearance of sound. There's no way to pin it down. It's just experience as it is. Suzuki goes on a little bit later. He says, in regards to what he was mentioning earlier, he says, that is how you free your true mind, or how you open your true mind. Only when you can do so in everyday life will you have soft mind. You won't have many preconceived ideas. Some bad habit of your way of thinking will not appear so strongly. It will appear, but it will not appear so strongly. And you will have a generous mind and big mind, and that will, and what you will say will help others. So, I thought I'd also mention that as Buddhism helps us understand the nature of self, that we don't actually find permanence, that's not to negate this appearance of self and others that we just use to negotiate our world. So, in order to kind of move around and communicate with other people, there's this, provisional sense that we have about different things that makes that possible. But the true understanding is of what Suzuki is talking about here. We don't actually find that as an absolute truth. This is just provisional. So we use the relative world to communicate with each other. We even identify important things. Think about what happened just last week at the Catholic school, very pressing things that are happening for us, and we have to use this sense of relative reality to work with each other, try to find compassion and understanding for people, and to come back to our practice to understand the truth of what's happening, to inform how we work in the world. And I think that same compassion is the compassion to understand that we don't need to stop thinking. We don't need to try to stop thinking or control things in our meditation as we may originally think we need to do. So when Suzuki Roshi is talking about everyday life here, he says, when you could do so in your everyday life, you will have soft mind. You will not have so many preconceived ideas. So it's a little bit, Andrew, like what you're saying there. When we dedicate to watching this over and over, we can see and we come back a little more readily, a little more quickly. So we can watch our life from moment to moment and have a practice that regularly reacquaints ourselves with what actually is true to life. And I mentioned the courses here. There's a lot of stuff coming up this fall. The practice period is another thing that can be quite helpful in practice. And that's starting in just a couple of weeks too. So this finding ways to regularly reacquaint ourselves with the truth of life. There's practice period, there's session coming up next week, and that's very much aligned with what I'm saying as well. This finding ways to reacquaint ourselves, ways of turning ourselves over to what's true and real, to recognize that that's what we truly are. And to recognize this vitality of immediacy itself. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have. So, yeah, Andrew, you gotta,
Yeah.
jump in here.
Just wanted to get a clarification. So, we're talking about there's no need to stop the thinking, but
That's right.
isn't the act of coming back stopping the thinking to get back to this?
No, I wouldn't say
Or
so.
short-circuiting it, maybe?
No, I wouldn't ultimately say that that's true at all. What's happening is we're just coming back to the breath. It's as simple as that, without any idea of why we're doing it. There's so many different, there's probably a lot of different techniques that are found in a lot of different types of meditation where you kind of see that quality of it's intended to have a certain outcome. But that's another probably quality of the breath is, what kind of outcome is that? It's this level playing field of the breath. It has no preference of itself. It's nothing, it's not enticing, like I was saying before. To think of it as a technique is just an idea, and it's not the spirit in which ultimately that we want to take forward in our practice.
So just the act of just kind of coming back naturally and refocusing on the breath is much different than coming back and then getting cross with yourself or thinking, oh, why was I worried about the garbage? Or,
Yep.
leave all the baggage there, just come back.
Yeah, it's funny. Even the breath, the breath is completely supporting our life. And yet, and I'm you're not the only one. I think I've sort of maybe thought those things too, that we would kind of think of the breath as doing something for us. And what we're doing is taking care of the breath. I think it's maybe Suzuki, a quote by Suzuki.
But that's a great point. You know, it's funny how quickly it can kind of creep in there about what's the sort of setting up objective type of flavor. Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Yeah, go ahead, Dean.
So on Friday evening, when we got here for meditation, somebody was using one of those real fast, almost vibrating saws. That's what it sounded like. It was high pitched. It sounded pretty annoying to
That's
me.
worse than garbage. That's way
And
worse than
so I
garbage.
decided, well, I think I will not open the Zendo windows and turn on the central systems fan instead.
Yeah.
Was I depriving people of the opportunity?
Yes. Kind of. No. No, it's like this building was purchased, that was something that happened, and we set the room up in a certain way so we don't have a lot of we don't have wallpaper on here with patterns on the walls. We don't have like a TV here instead of a rock. So there's things that we do that again, this is the relative world and negotiating what needs to be done. The true point here is the spirit in which we do something and to really watch our intention. So it's kind of like the koans. A teacher could see one person closing the window and say, that's wrong, but then see it happen again and say, that's right. Because what I'm talking about here is what's in our heart and mind. If we're doing it for something or we have objective, then there's something to look at there in terms of like we need to take a look at this basically. So you'll never know whether it's right or wrong. The point is to really watch our mind. And but I think what you did probably was out of a desire to help create a calm, quiet room. So if I was to wager, I think you're probably in the clear here. Like all the other things that we've done, to make a quiet space here conducive for quiet meditation. Yeah, sometimes the it's around this time of year that they have homecoming over there. And does it happen during session sometimes?
Yes, it does.
And then like all the thinking that's going on in your mind maybe, and if it just seems like there's a marching band that's going on in my mind and you're thinking, oh wait, that's a real marching band out there. I think there's another quote about Suzuki saying that a practice that in which we're not bothered by various images that we have in our mind, just let them come in and let them go out. So even if there is a reciprocating saw or jackhammer or something, we can just let that sound come and go as it is. Any other questions at all, or yeah,
I
Andrew.
really liked your talk. It gave me a whole new,
Sorry. I really liked your talk. It gave me kind of a whole new awareness of just this. I'm like, oh yeah, the that, just this, So
Yep.
that was a nice talk. Thanks.
Thank you. Dependent arising and powerful teaching. It's talking about how relative reality shows up, that this whole picture shows up. And it's reflective of actually the true nature of things, where it's just this. So even the relative world, we find complete dependence.
of everything. So even the relative world may seem very distinct and fragmented, but in some sense, when we see dependent arising, we see this understanding that's pointing us back to just this. Even the relative world is pointing us back to just this. So one thing, it may seem like one separate thing in the world. What we have is actually the full, complete picture, even in this appearance of relative. And so it's sort of the beauty of insentient beings teaching Dharma, or the whole world, sentient beings or insentient beings teaching Dharma. So yeah, thanks.
Some things came to mind as you were talking and others were commenting. I don't know if it's the Shinshin Ming or Kansa Senge, but there's the passage, the more talking and thinking, the further from the truth. The passage isn't talking and thinking, the further from the truth, the more talking. So I think rather than, you know, in our practice, you know, trying to come back to the breath to say that thinking is taking us away or it's bad or, you know, putting it in a category that's not helpful or something. We do need to think. We do need to talk. But we need to have an awareness of there's no end of distraction in this world. There's no end of just the churning of things unfolding constantly and new things arising and whatever. So our minds, it's having an appreciation of the way our minds are structured and the way our, you know, we're kind of wired to be pulled away, and that having an awareness that being right here with what's going on right now enables us to live more fully. And so we're really taking care of our life, really, with noticing how much talking and thinking is going on, or thinking, you know, we're not really talking when we're in here doing our sitting meditation practice, but talking in our minds or chattering away or listening to something out there that is noisy or taking our awareness away from our breath. And just coming back as an awareness of the balance of things, like how much thinking is going on and could we, you know, come back and whatnot, just having an awareness of balance. Anyway, that's my comment.
Thank you. Great. Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. It's easy to kind of vilify thinking or thinking that it's somehow the barricade, you know, it's between us and enlightenment. Or Suzuki's really great at just, we don't have to be bothered by it, actually. It just, like, feel the importance of an idea that may be happening. And for me, this teaching is a, it's almost like having a deep respect for words and ideas by actually seeing through what we normally take them as, which is like, you know, the kind of end all be all. My idea of how it should be is just like sort of disrespecting words to do that. So thinking can happen, and we can use it respectfully and compassionately. And so, yeah, thanks for that. Appreciate it.
I read a quote this morning that I thought was so beautiful, and I will not be able to articulate its eloquence, so I will just share the concept. And it came from Baker Roshi, and he said, when I was younger, I had all these, you know, grand plans for my life in the future. And he said, as I got older, life became so simple because I realized that what the only thing that really mattered was right in front of me right now. And I just thought that was so, so lovely, especially for a country like ours where there's so much striving and achievement. And it resonated for me because, of course, that's like hardwired in my DNA. But anyway, I wanted to share that, sort of aligned with some of the things we were talking today.
Yeah, you're not the only one. It's something that we all deal with for
looking out there for something, you know, something just a little bit better or something grand, or, you know, it could be all kinds of things, but yeah, what else is there? Just the sound of the cicadas or whatever it might be. It's just like, I don't think we want to give that up. It's just everything is, this is it. So the practice is, and I love, you know, really the everyday feeling that comes out of a lot of these teachings. It doesn't have to look anything special. It's really appreciating our life. So thanks for that quote. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.